It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. President Trump signed a memorandum Tuesday that would prohibit undocumented immigrants from being counted in the census when it comes to drawing the lines for congressional districts. This comes after the Supreme Court in 2019 rejected his attempt to ask respondents to the census if they are citizens. Monica Ruiz is the executive director of Casa San Jose, a community resource center that advocates for and helps Latinos integrate into the Pittsburgh area. Monica, let's start with your reaction to the president's order.
My reaction has been the same reaction that I've had for the past 3.5 years every time he does something to try to deny the basic human rights of immigrants, whether they are documented or undocumented. You know, this order is illegal, it's unconstitutional, but it doesn't surprise me.
And some groups, including the ACLU, have already said that they plan to file a suit to block this order. According to census.gov, nationally, about 62% of people have responded to the census by phone, online, or in person. In the Pittsburgh area, that figure is about 59%. Casa San Jose is working with Keystone Counts to target often undercounted communities in the Commonwealth. What does your work with them entail?
So we have made a commitment to make sure that everyone is counted. So, you know, we have put out information on social media. We have encouraged families to fill it out. We've assisted with hundreds and hundreds of families in having them fill out the census at the office. So this is something that we've put a lot of effort into it because we want people to be counted, right? And so any attempt to like have them not count, again, it's just unconstitutional. And it's a clear attempt to scare and silence our immigrant communities.
So how do you overcome that fear?
So again, you know, we did a lot of advocacy and a lot of work to make sure that the citizenship question was not on the census. Had that question been on the census, we probably wouldn't be having this phone call because we wouldn't have advocated so much for folks to fill out the census. And then now really getting the message out to people, you know, yes, we stand behind the decision that we made to have folks fill out the census, and we're standing behind this decision to speak out against what he's trying to do now.
If a congressman looks at census data and thinks there are only X number of Latinos in Pittsburgh when there are many more, they might not prioritize programs that Latinos need?
Absolutely. But not only that, I mean, you know, children and schools, school districts won't get the funding that they need. And, you know, the kids go to school. Many of these children are American citizens, right? And so the schools will be underfunded, and then that affects the quality of education, not only of these children, but of everybody else's children as well.
And this would also apply to businesses that want to reach Latino customers?
Correct, absolutely. And then that's just the economic impact, but in reality, what it does is it discriminates against and disenfranchises communities as well. And we don't want to live in communities where people are afraid.
If undocumented Latinos are not counted in the census, is it harder for organizations like yours to raise money and get your message out to the policymakers, the people who make the laws?
Absolutely. It's very difficult for us now because we're still operating with the numbers off of the census 10 years ago. And the population has grown so rapidly that, you know, even when I'm working with funders trying to express to them the need and how much it's grown, even within the last 3 years, it's difficult for me to prove that because the data is obviously outdated, and not allowing these folks to be counted will just continue that same pattern.
Are you expecting to sign on to any lawsuit, whether it's your organization or Keystone Counts, challenging this latest order by the president?
Absolutely. We're already in those conversations.
What are your expectations?
At this point, you know, our communities are already under-resourced. You know, if we cannot provide the services that are needed for people to thrive, then it falls back on the individual communities to support them. You know, Casa San Jose is a small nonprofit organization, and we are doing way more than we are built to do. We're taking on the job of the government to provide resources and assistance to people who live in our communities. And so at some point, we're not going to be able to do that. So we have to force our government to take care of the people that are living in this country, paying their taxes, and contributing to making this a very vibrant community. Again, I can't stress enough, you know, Pittsburgh's population is decreasing, and the only population that's increasing is the immigrant population. So what is going to happen to cities like ours if we're not taking care of our most vulnerable?
Monica Ruiz is the executive director of Casa San Jose. Thanks, Monica, for your time.
Thank you, Kevin.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. On March 15th, as Pennsylvania was bracing for a shutdown, the contenders for the Democratic nomination for president spoke at a debate in Washington. They talked about the looming pandemic, but much of the exchange centered on fossil fuels and climate change. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders took aim at the industry that has driven much of the economic growth in western Pennsylvania for more than a decade.
We are fighting for the future of this planet, for the well-being of our kids and future generations. You cannot continue, as I understand Joe believes, to continue fracking.
Vice President Joe Biden did not call for a ban on fracking altogether, but instead talked about his support for subsidizing renewable energy.
No more, no new fracking. And by the way, on the Recovery Act, I was able to make sure we invested $90 billion in making sure we brought down the price of solar and wind that is lower than the price of coal. That's why not another new coal plant will be built.
The Biden campaign recently released its climate change platform. Democrats call the plan a unity document. What might the Biden proposal mean for the energy industry in western Pennsylvania? Daniel Moore is a reporter with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. So, Daniel, this plan was hashed out by 9 Democrats, contains no mention of a ban on fracking. Who was included in the group, and how did they arrive at this proposal?
Yeah, that's a good question. So as you mentioned, 9 Democrats were nominated to this task force on climate change. And Congressman Connor Lamb, who, of course, represents Western Allegheny County and all of Beaver County, was one of the 9 people. This was basically a document written by supporters of Joe Biden, the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, and Bernie Sanders, his top progressive opponent in the primary, to iron out a unity platform. And climate change section was really interesting because the core disagreement, as I've seen it, is the question of whether we phase out fossil fuels entirely, and if so, kind of how quickly we do that and what it means economically for regions like Pittsburgh, which have traditionally relied on fossil fuels like coal and natural gas.
Earlier this year, Connor Lamb accused progressive Democrats of betraying Pennsylvania by proposing a ban on all fracking by 2025 as part of the Green New Deal. Can you talk about Lamb's support of the natural gas industry, especially the construction of the ethane cracker in Beaver County?
His fingerprints on this document come into play when you see things like, you know, calling out pipe fitters and plumbers and insulators as union jobs that could support the production of natural gas and the distribution of natural gas in a clean way. And that includes, of course, the Shell cracker plant, which relies on the production of natural gas and, you know, natural gas liquids as a feedstock for the production of plastic. So, and of course, that is right in the heart of his district. A lot of jobs there. So he has been pretty consistent on pushing back against any notion that we need to eliminate fossil fuels as a way to clean up the environment.
Right. You mentioned labor unions, lots of jobs at the ethane cracker plant.
Right.
Biden has pitched himself as pro-union for decades. What reaction are you hearing from unions to Biden's plan?
Yeah, it's a mix of reactions, and it's kind of interesting because I spoke with Jim Kuntz with the operating engineers. And he said he wasn't ready to endorse Trump or Biden at the moment. And he said that his membership had some concerns about Biden's plan. And they point to the fact that Joe Biden, during the debate and during his campaign, has maybe not been the most forceful or consistent in promising to defend the natural gas industry. And if you look at the unity document, natural gas and fracking are not mentioned in any way directly. So on one hand, there is no fracking ban. On the other hand, there was no statement that was like, natural gas is the bridge fuel to the future and a perfect partner for renewables. And there was no endorsement of the industry. And so I think a lot of unions in our region are still a little bit nervous and wary, and they want to see more from Joe Biden.
A few weeks ago, Pennsylvania's attorney general released a report after a 2-year grand jury investigation found that the state has failed to adequately regulate the natural gas industry. Through this plan, is the Biden campaign betting that voters in Pennsylvania and other energy-producing states still support fracking in spite of any possible environmental risks?
I think he's looking at the number of jobs that this industry supports, and he's listening to other Democrats like Congressman Lamb, like Congressman Mike Doyle, who, you know, supports the industry, supports the steel industry specifically in his district. Joe Biden's looking at lessons from 2016, where President Trump, then a candidate, campaigned a lot in Western Pennsylvania on supporting the natural gas industry. Joe Biden is taking a look at all of this, and I think he's betting on the fact that the economy in Pennsylvania is such that any threat to roll back fracking, natural gas, or the energy industry as a whole is not a good move for his campaign.
The natural gas industry was in trouble before the pandemic hit. Price of natural gas had fallen to near record lows. Drillers were over leveraged, some even cutting back on operations. What are you hearing from drillers about the Democrats' plan? Do they think it'll help make the industry sustainable or prolong the decline?
The drilling industry and the Marcellus Shale Coalition specifically has expressed some concerns about the plan. Again, they want to see more of an endorsement. They don't want anybody to demonize the industry or to bring up, you know, environmental challenges that the industry has faced. And they are challenged. They're over-leveraged. You know, they're having to pay debt through the pandemic without having a lot of revenue coming in. You know, the last thing that they want from their perspective is a regulatory regime. They really tout their product as being clean and environmentally friendly, and they think they're a good partner for the renewable energy industry, and they want to be a part of that, and they did not see that in Joe Biden's plan.
Daniel Moore is a reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Thanks so much, Daniel.
Thanks for having me.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Joe Biden's green energy plan marks a strong contrast from President Donald Trump, who has long championed fossil fuels. 90.5 WESA's Lucy Perkins is following 4 Western Pennsylvania voters, asking them about issues that could sway their decision at the ballot box this fall. For this month's installment of our Split Ticket series, they talked about energy and the environment.
The climate crisis has always loomed large in the back of Linda Bishop's mind.
You know, you could make the case that climate change is the biggest issue because it's an existential issue.
Linda's a Democrat, though she's also been a Republican. She's in her 60s, retired, and lives in Mars, Pennsylvania. And she uses her time to keep up with developments on the campaign trail.
Trump is always saying, you know, he wants to create jobs, but where's his infrastructure plan? There hasn't been an infrastructure plan. Biden has an infrastructure plan.
Biden's multi-trillion dollar plan would build green infrastructure and invest in renewable energy. He says that would eliminate emissions that lead to climate change by 2050. Some Democrats say his proposal's too middle of the road, in part because it doesn't ban fracking. But Linda's glad it doesn't mention the gas drilling technique, which is widely used in Pennsylvania.
It's unrealistic and it's bad for Pennsylvania to ban fracking. He knows that. And so the question is, how do we go about this? And that's where I like the Biden plan, because Biden has not come out in favor of banning fracking.
Progressive Democrat Savannah Henry also sees climate change as a big problem. She was originally a Bernie Sanders supporter and thinks it's critical to ban fracking now. She'll be a junior at the University of Pittsburgh this fall, and last year she went to protests and organized around climate justice. But now?
I think right now a lot of people are more worried about COVID, and I think that's maybe where I'm at too, and like freaking out about going back to school. So I think my lack of spark is because of the isolation, I would say.
And in any case, she's confident Biden is better than Trump, who's rolled back environmental protections and campaigned on promises to bring back coal mines and expand oil and gas drilling.
I can't think of anything that he's done that is even borderline like helpful for the environment.
Savannah has a surprising ally in Mary Henze, who's otherwise a huge Trump supporter.
There is global warming. It's man's greed that has created it. And when we dig and we take away the coal and the oil and all of that that has been there for millions of years, well, it was dead and buried for a reason. What did we expect was going to happen?
Mary's in her 50s and lives in Jefferson Hills. She's been on disability for about a decade and was a Democrat for years before flipping to Trump in 2016. Both the coal and gas industries were suffering before the pandemic, and Mary acknowledges that Trump's campaign promises haven't done anything to change that.
And this is where I go, you know, yeah, I'm going to vote for Trump, but every politician says things to get what they want.
But Mary says even if Biden's proposal was put into action, the planet's already too far gone. She believes the environmental problems we're seeing are a warning from God. Her solution?
Prayer. Get yourself right, because the time is coming. We are in self-demise.
I don't see it. The pictures of polar bears stranded on ice caps out in the middle of nowhere is just nonsense.
Republican Ed Swiklinski is in his 40s and lives with his wife and young kids in Bethel Park. He's working part-time in cybersecurity. Of our four voters, he's the only one who doesn't believe in climate change. He thinks researchers are simply making up numbers about the problem and that schools shouldn't talk to kids about the issue. He believes that should be left to parents like him.
Because I'm going to tell them the truth. I'm serious.
And where do you get your information from?
Life experience. I have multiple sources that I look it up.
Ed also says Trump's promise to bring back fossil fuels like coal hasn't amounted to much. But Joe Biden's plan?
Smoke and mirrors.
Ed says there's no way the Democrats' proposal could reduce greenhouse gases, or for scientists to even accurately measure carbon emissions. But the groups who do keep track of that data say in order to curb the most dramatic effects of global warming, action in the next decade will be critical. I'm Lucy Perkins, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. If you enjoy what you're hearing, there's even more to read on our website at WESA.fm, where our newsroom is rounding up everything you need to know about how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting our region and beyond. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at WESA.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovich, Doug Schugertz, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.